Finovate showcases cutting-edge banking and financial technology through a global conference series featuring short-form demos and thought leadership. Now, the conversation continues on the Finovate podcast.
Welcome to the Finovate podcast. This is Greg Palmer. Joining me today, we have Sharon Kamathi, the editor of FinTech Futures, the magazine that was formerly Banking Technology and is also part of the Informa brand. Sharon, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
So we're going to tackle a really difficult question today. Obviously, a lot of people have been watching the news, watching what's been happening around the world with the Black Lives Matter movement. And it may feel like we're really disconnected from that, that fintech is an industry which is separate from that. But one of the things that the last couple of months have shown us, I think very thoroughly, is how interconnected everything in the world is at the moment, how quickly ideas can spread from one region to another, how quickly, obviously, illnesses can spread from one region to another. But I think one thing that's really worth pointing out is that this can actually be a good thing, that there are ways that we can use what we're doing in an industry like financial technology to make the world at least a little bit better or to alleviate some of the pieces of it. And that's what we'd really like to talk about today. So Sharon, I think it'd be worth starting with just a couple of your own experiences. Obviously, coming from the UK will be slightly different from what people in the United States might have experienced, but ultimately, maybe not as different as it might seem. So I'll just kick it over to you to start with some of your own experiences as an individual dealing with the financial industry and the financial technology industry.
Absolutely. So there was an instance with my mom, who is a small business owner. She owns her own recruitment agency, and she would often go to the same branch in the area every week in order to process the payslips. So this would be done every Friday, I think. And in one of the Fridays, I was there with her. I think it was just part of, you know, routine, dropping me off or something somewhere when I was younger. And I happened to see exactly what sort of awkward instances she had to deal with on a weekly basis. So this is the same individual she would go to the checkout to see every week. And they would constantly ask about her background, more documentation than usual, so her passport, like utility bills, even though she's already been there multiple times, talking to the same person, constantly making her feel small because she has an African accent of Kenyan descent. So they would make out as though they can't understand anything that she's saying, which was often quite rude and belittling. So these instances would happen every single week until there was a solution, which is online banking, where she didn't have to deal with any of these people anymore. So that was useful.
Here's the in-branch experience, right, which everybody is trying to protect. And I think that's an important piece to recognize. What that experience looks like can vary wildly from person to person, and especially based on the ethnicity of the actual customer. So from a customer standpoint, and again, this is not a unusual bank. This is a standard suburban, and the story is not unique to the United Kingdom at all, something we see quite a bit of in the United States as well. So I think that's a great place to start. But then I think you also, you know, you've worked inside the industry at various organizations as well. So you have some experience on the other side of the coin, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. So back in my experience at Goldman Sachs, they often felt as though there was a push to have some communities and committees set up for different people, either people of color, gay, lesbian, transsexual, just having a forum, basically. So once they created the Black Minority Ethnic Forum, it was actually led by an old white man. He was quite senior in the bank. And during the very first meeting, so there wasn't one before, it was the very first launch, he pointed out to one of the young Black male graduates who's going through a scheme. He just graduated from a local London university. And he basically pointed to him and said, "See, this is what we did. And he needs to now assimilate when he's joining the bank, get with the culture. So if he needs to go out and watch the rugger," so that's rugby, by the way, "go out and watch the rugger so he can talk to the boys when he's back in. And that's how you can assimilate in this group." So yeah.
So perfect. I mean, that's really an excellent example of the type. I mean, even when you say, okay, that's a step in the right direction, right? You are aware that there's a problem. You're actually taking steps to correct it. But obviously the way that you go about doing that is not ultimately helpful. And to even just have, you know, kind of an old white male chair of that organization already speaks volumes about what that organization is going to be trying to do. So, but let's come back, because there's two different sides here. So let's explore the customer side first, because, you know, as we mentioned, the experience that your mother had is certainly not unique, and it can be something which can really put a lot of people off of the banking system. If you get that type of reception on a week in, week out basis, it becomes so easy to say, you know what, I don't need this anymore. And full credit to your mother for continuing to persevere in the face of that type of kind of low key ice out vibe, which you can get. So many people don't do that. And in the United States, we see this with a variety of different situations. But one company who we had on stage at Finovate a couple of years back was called Money Amigo, was specifically attacking this problem, which exists in the Spanish-speaking population here in the United States, where so many of those individuals who are in the country legally, by the way, basically just choose not to engage with the formal banking system because of experiences like that. And Money Amigo is looking at how can they use technology to, just like with your mother, to be able to say, you know, you don't actually need to go into a branch anymore. You can do all of these things without having to engage with that type of person. So it's worth noting that fintech can really make a difference there in this type of environment. And that when you think about, you know, as a bank manager, what your branch experience looks like, it's so easy to imagine an idealized version of it. And in many cases, the reality is a lot uglier, a lot harsher.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, one area where fintech, I think, can make a big difference is kind of in the credit decisioning area as well, looking at how we can get people financial products, which can help them to improve their lives. So many people who are able to be successful, you know, in an entrepreneurial sense, are able to be successful because they can get a small business loan, because they can get some equity somewhere. And so this is another area, I think, where fintech can make a big difference. Have you seen, is that type of thing popular in the UK, by the way? Do you guys see a lot of that on the other side of the Atlantic?
Oh, in terms of initiatives for people of color and in venture capital spaces?
Yeah, or even just on the consumer credit level, trying to get lending, you know, actual fair loans in the hands of people of color.
Oh, yeah. So that's something that the Financial Conduct Authority already raised last year. So during an audit as to how banking technology has actually helped or hindered people of color, it found out that insurers are actually more likely to profile their customers, as are credit and lenders. They're more likely to do that too to people of color. So it's mainly through having information that can identify your race or ethnicity. And once they capture that data, they found that when it's aggregated, it actually punishes someone who is from an ethnic background. So, I mean, hopefully there'll be something that happens in the future where that won't be the case. But yeah, it does happen in the UK too.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And I mean, at least there is some data starting to emerge on that, which can quantify it, because I think so much of the fintech industry is data driven. But there's enough data starting to mount where you, as a bank manager, if you aren't positive that the systems that you have in place will prevent your employees from discriminating against customers who come into their bank, who will prevent this type of profiling based on ethnic background, that you have to assume it's happening. And the data would bear that out. The data would say, yes, it is happening. And these are not studies that are done, you know, 20, 30 years ago. These are studies that are done right now.
Exactly. Because, I mean, with that report, that only just happened in November. So I guess they're just going to keep collating it to see how far things have come. But from their analysis at the moment, it's not looking very good for people of, you know, a different ethnic minority group or even a different gender too. So... Yeah.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about one of the other aspects here that I think is really important. We hear a lot of people talking about the importance of getting more businesses, more fintech businesses that are founded by people of color. And this is something which a lot of people in the fintech space have been talking about for a while. It still seems like it's not happening, at least to the level or the scope that we would want it to. But so much of what we're talking about boils down to a lived experience, which is really different from what a lot of people, white males in fintech, have as a lived experience. And from my own personal standpoint, what you're talking about, the in-branch experiences, are something which I couldn't have imagined. You know, that's so different from my own upbringing. And there's my privilege coming through, because I couldn't have imagined that until you start to hear about it. And so I think if you don't, as a white male, actively sort of seek this out, seek this perspective out, you could easily just ignore it. You could blow right by it. And that's exactly why it's so important that we get companies started by people who have those lived experiences and who really can address those problems.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I guess there've been quite a few people working together to put lists together, so that way venture capitalists and other firms who want to invest can actually see where they are. For example, there's one on Medium, you know, the article platform, and it's called the Black Founders List. If you want to see it and find it, it is medium.com/@POCintech/the Black Founders List. And within it, you can see an actually live Google document that has all of the Black venture capitalists and tech professionals and founders in the US. So people can go in it and update it. And you can check it out there. There's so many already, and there are loads of people adding to it every single day. And honestly, they're adding it right now as I'm speaking.
Excellent. Well, I mean, good that people are uploading and continuing to engage. And then from the venture capital side, you know, you mentioned that there are some VCs, some funds available that are kind of aimed really at funding this type of business founded by people of color. Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, some of the work that you're seeing on that side as well?
Absolutely. So if it's recently, then I'll probably draw attention to the SoftBank Fund that's just looking for people of color founders. So that one is $100 million, and that launched 2 weeks ago. And then if you're looking for one that's specifically by Black venture capitalist people, there is a Harlem Capital, which is founded by Black people, and they are looking for other diverse founders over the next 20 years, and they've got 40.3 million. So they're just looking for ones in the New York City, Harlem neighborhood. If you're a person of color in the district, then I guess you can reach out to them as well and have a look.
So, I mean, I'm just going to point out the obvious here. That leaves some fairly sizable holes in coverage on what we're talking about. And I think one of the things that we really need to see from the industry as a whole is it not having to be venture capital groups founded specifically to fund this type of entrepreneurship from certain communities. It really needs to be something that's broader than that. And mainstream venture capital partners, I think, are missing opportunities because of, you know, an overlooking this blind spot of this type of company. So there's an opportunity there. And I think one of the things that will be really interesting to see is what types of return those venture capital groups get. And if they can start to demonstrate that there's a huge opportunity there, which I strongly suspect that there is, then it becomes something which makes it harder for the rest of the industry to continue to ignore. Well, all the best of luck to them. And obviously, we hope to hear more stories. So if you're listening to this and you know of others, by the way, please do tweet out at GregPalmer47, at Finnovate. We're always curious to hear more. We can continue to update some resources at the end of this episode. So Sharon, I know we've gone slightly long here, but any kind of closing thoughts from your side?
I would say if you are in an institution and you're upper management, just, you know, be there to listen to your people of color, especially when they flag anything up, such as racial abuse or an incident. Don't just reach out and say, okay, that's it, super serious, we're going to escalate, this person's going to get fired effectively immediately. Do try and communicate with the people, mediation, training, that sort of thing, so that way everyone can have a comfortable environment, because that's what it's about at the end of the day. You want your employees to always feel comfortable. Once all those measures have been exercised, then that's when you can, you know, push that red button. Yes, escalate, fired immediately. But just listen is the most important thing at the moment, and just be open for change, because change is happening.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great spot to leave it. And from our side, I'll just reiterate, you know, at Finovit, we've had a number of companies up on stage founded by people of color, companies that have focused on these problems, and they've done well. And we encourage people to apply to our shows, to come and present at our shows. We are very happy to be a platform for any type of entrepreneurs who have good ideas. And I think especially companies founded by people of color who do have a different perspective and bring something very unique to our fintech market. So anybody who is interested in learning more about that, let us know. Again, finovate.com, tweet us at Finovate. I'm at GregPalmer47. We're always happy to continue those conversations. So Sharon, thank you again for joining me. This has been a really great conversation, and I look forward to kind of following up on this at some point in the not too distant future and see how things are changing. I think this is an important one to make sure we don't lose sight of. So we'll come back and circle back on this in a little bit.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Greg.
The Finovate podcast is produced by Informa Connect in association with Provoke.fm Media. Check out Finovate.com for information on Finovate's upcoming shows and to learn how you can get involved. The discount code Finovate Podcast will save you 20% on tickets to all of our events. And you can email us at info@finovate.com for information on sponsoring, speaking, or demoing. Thanks for listening.